Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hi, everybody. It's October 23rd, Saturday. And tonight, our special guest, who finally made it on, is David Clarence to take us on a step-by-step journey into this executor letter. Right, David?
Yes.
How are you tonight?
Excellent. Very good.
Good, good.
It's a terrific Sabbath. And I guess that's about all, folks. Thank you very much. Good night.
Yeah, right. Did you work out a step-by-step summary for us? I know you revised the executor letter, what, 7 times now?
Yeah, I'm notorious for that.
That's okay. Perfection is a good thing. I don't have a problem with it. It's just that I had to update the website 7 different times with that PDF. But it's up there for those of you that didn't get the latest revision. You can go to myprivateaudio.com and click on the David Clarence ad, for lack of a better term, on the right, and it'll take you there. Or you can go to
County Notary, /, highest office in law.
And then what, just scroll down?
Yeah, if you just type in County Notary, all one word, and that is one word, it'll come up in any search engine, the Google group. If you want to wait a few minutes, I can talk about those children.
Well, why don't you do that? Go ahead. Mainly everybody, first of all, David, everybody needs to download both of them or just one or the other?
Either one.
Well, the one's different. One has a wife on it.
Well, it does, but the body of the document's basically the same, except for the one for the wife or the child, they would be entering the name off the certificate of birth and the file number off the certificate of birth under where it says regarding.
Well, who would use one or the other? Who would use, like, we know a man would use the one that says executor letter, right?
Well, that's for an executor or executrix in the rare instance where a woman's going to be able to act in the capacity of the executrix. And then the other one is for a husband or a father.
Go ahead and tell us about the children. That's a good story. I like good stories.
Yeah, a war story. I can't tell you where this happened. Agreed to that. The men that are working together on these projects to give you folks these remedies that the estate and executor letter is part of. We were in conference last night. The one man who has had a lifetime friend was going through a bad divorce. I guess there's no good one. What the circumstances are, I don't know. I'm told it is a good man, and he's not abusive or anything like that. And so whatever the situation is, I don't know. He's not a drunkard or something. The wife had gotten a treacherous lawyer that, actually, this is out in kind of a rural area where the judge that was sitting on this barfly divorce and custody action was actually headquartered in a neighboring county. But the population is so low there that he just comes over to that county and sits on cases over there. And it just so happens that his barfly son, and both of them live in palatial estates along the river next to each other. Isn't that interesting? Happened to be the attorney that filed these divorce and custody action. And the wife made a lot of allegations against the husband that he was a poor father, not abusive or anything like that, and Children and Youth Services got involved in it, and they decided that he was only going to be able to visit his children for 20 minutes a month, and that would be supervised in their daycare or nursery area in their office while he's being videotaped and their privacy. And folks are familiar with how that industry works, and it is an industry. A child kidnapping industry, that's the way they do things under the guise of protecting the children. And it's not, it's just to cause a lot of animosity and tear the family apart. In either case, the whole divorce action wasn't going well. The man that's working with us filed some documents I can't show them to you or anything like that. But the outcome of that was that the father is recognized as the executor of the children's estates, and that their estates are property of his estate. The next day, the caseload for that judge was stripped from him, and he appears to have been removed from the bench. He's nowhere to be found.
Why is that?
It's what the executor letter will do, or exposing that any of these attorneys who are taking any type of action against the All Caps name, contrary to what we've all been taught by the commerce gurus, and I'm not going to take anything away from their research because it's led to, ultimately, to our being given discernment to understand that these estates exist in the executor office, but that All Caps name is not a corporation. I repeat, it is not, and it is not a straw man. It is, in fact, an estate or a trust. And I'll go into that a little bit more here this evening. But the son is also absent. I think the law firm's attorney's office might be closed, and he can't get in contact with him, can't find either one of them anywhere. And the governor of the state has dispatched two special agents to that county to, I suppose, to put the court system back together again because it's been ripped to pieces.
How do you know this?
From documents and reports and from the special agents.
They contacted you?
No, they contacted this father. And so he can have custody of his children if he wants, and he's not going to have to leave his home anymore or be forced to give it up or sell it. Wouldn't surprise me if his life is in danger right now.
Really?
Oh, sure. They take out the most senior judge in two counties, you know. It destroyed his profession, his career, probably his livelihood. It may bankrupt him, ultimately.
By doing what? What did he do to cause all this? He put in the executor letter?
Yes. He put in documentation that he was the executor.
So it wasn't necessarily your paperwork?
No.
It's not cool to walk around in fear of your life, you know, and being taken out because you got some judge axed.
Yeah. You're always in charge.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't give the children back, take them away from that terrible family or children in youth services just to have the father, assassinated. He doesn't work that way. He doesn't give a blessing in one hand and then slap you with the other.
It happens all the time, David.
It does to people that are operating in sin. That's the wages of sin, dear. That's what taxes and licensing is all about. Those are the wages of sin.
So he got his children back. That's wonderful. He's living in his house and all is well with his world, right?
Yes.
And so are there any more court dates or hearings or anything else?
No, that's over.
Okay, so where's the wife?
I don't know. Maybe she went home to mommy. Got a boyfriend or something. I don't know. I don't know the particulars of it.
Well, that's good news. You know, they were rescued.
Yes. The executor letter, when properly done and served, should accomplish the same thing if you folks will do more than just copy and paste it together. And actually sit down and read it over and over and over again.
Okay, you want to take us on our little journey through the executor letter and give us a step-by-step, maybe give us some clarity on some of the questions that have been asked. And also we've got people that are going to be asking you questions too.
How about, we didn't serve the drinks yet.
Oh, pretend I did, David.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
This is David Clarence, executor, expressly reserving all liberties, a notary on the land, New York County, Nation, Pennsylvania, next to the barfly-infested county of York Corporation. You can contact me by emailing me as County Notary, all one word, CountyNotary, at Gmail. That's God mail, and our God is Almighty Yahweh, gmail.com. Thank you for joining us tonight, folks, and thank Angela for inviting us. Apologize for not making an appointment last week due to mechanical difficulties with the party wagon. We're going to discuss the estate or estates and the executor's letter tonight. Without getting a little bit into scripture, folks, I can't really give you a foundation of this estate and this executor letters because they're based on that, and it's not religion. It's law, and it's called trust law and estate law. That is the highest law that there is. There is no law higher than that. Scripture is, for the majority, the most part, all trust and estate law. And trust and estate law trumps every other type of law that you've ever heard of or had contact with from the world system of the barfly lying lawyers, be it treaty law or civil law or criminal law, laws of nations, that's treaty law, domestic law, probate. Their probate is all trust in the state law. It's all based on that with a sprinkling of some other junk in there like they do when they merged equity and law together and got the perversion that they've been using for about 20 or 30 years now. It's no law at all. But all those types of so-called laws, and they are not laws at all. They're just made-up rules. That's all it is. It's just a rules made up by those who make the rules for the world game that the barflies manage and manipulate everything and say, and they are control everything. So it's there's never been a remedy in their form, and never will be. The commerce that some folks, maybe even most of you tonight, that are interested in, is just another variation of barfly rules, UCC and contract law, as it is operating in the world system today. It's not true contract law, and you know that because you never get full disclosure. And when there is not full disclosure, there cannot be a true contract. So everything that the commerce gurus and commercial people, and I'm not criticizing them, believe in and teach and promote is just another delusion of the world of the barfly, which is all imaginary and diluted. You can't find a consistent remedy using commerce procedures or pro se procedures in the barfly courts or administrative procedures because there's no equity, equality, no justice there, say. It's just not there to be found. You'll never get it. Now, some people seem to get some relief and here and there with some things, but it's not consistent. As long as it's not consistent, it's not true law and it's not a true remedy. It should work for everyone, and it must be simple, say, because it just has to be. It has to be simplistic that anyone with a seventh grader or higher education should be able to grasp it and take advantage of the remedy. If it's not, or that can't be done and can't understand it, with just a little research and looking a few words up in a dictionary, then it's not a true remedy for everyone, say. And it must be in order to be fair. So that's the foundation of the executor letter is, I guess I've managed to make it maybe complicated to some folks. I'm not sure, but it seems like a lot of folks don't understand why certain things are in that letter and why they have to be there and why certain things have to be described the way they are. There's a particular reason and a deliberate intent with every word and comma and hyphen and bracket and quotation mark, not explanation marks, thank you for the folks that corrected me on that one, on that document. They're all there deliberately for a reason. And the reasons are not just my way of doing things. They all have a specific, particular legal reason for being there, make the document as powerful as possible and eliminate wiggle room for the barflies to get out of and around it, say. Because I invariably do that every time. They do have a Juris Doctor in twisting language and words. They come out of law school with a degree in word twisting, and you have to... people that have been involved in interacting with barflies for a while, they soon get the idea it doesn't matter how you write something on a document, the lawyer will invariably come along and twist everything around in what you're trying to describe, and your position or argument or complaint or whatever it is, they invariably will twist everything around. They have a particular knack for going through documents and looking for holes. And when they find a hole in something, you will find in their pleadings, responses and things like that, that they will concentrate on that hole and they will ignore everything else that is fatal to their side, be it the prosecution or the defense. They would just completely ignore it, like it doesn't even exist, like you'd never put it on the paper. And that's what they do, because they're deceitful. The profession. They're invariably the only profession singled out other than the money changers in Scripture, and they're cursed. That means a great deal, folks. It just does. The wording in Scripture is woe unto ye lawyers, and what that woe means is the Lord God is going to destroy them. He's going to punish them terribly, all of them. No matter if you know a lawyer, you're related to one, or in some way or other, and they may be decent folks, I'm not saying they're not, but they know secrets that they won't even tell you, and you may not believe that. They could be your husband or your wife or your children. They will not tell you. And this existence of this estate and using this, and the executor or executrix office and using just a simple letter, one page, to deal with anything that is brought upon you with paperwork is proof of that. These lawyers already know this stuff. It's not new to them. They know these estates exist. I'll guarantee you they do. And the executor office. The lawyers, the barflies, deliberately left the word estate off of that all capitalized name on that certificate of birth to disguise what it is, and that the state exists. They deliberately leave the word estate or executor or trust or trustee off of all the paperwork. They abandon directing it towards your attention, say. They do that to defeat you. Having knowledge about something when you're at war, and all lawyering is warfare on paper and by their mouths in their courtrooms, having knowledge that the other side doesn't have is a distinct advantage. And it's a distinct disadvantage and disability to the other side that doesn't have the knowledge. See? It's the way with everything. Doesn't matter what it is, parenthood, a trade, profession, sports activities. You know, if you were into football or basketball or things like that, until you learned all the ins and outs of that particular activity, you weren't proficient at it, say. Driving is the same way. Riding a bicycle is no different. You had to have the knowledge that was only known by those who knew how to ride bicycles, see? And how to safely operate automobiles, and how to be good parents, and good carpenters, good plumbers, good football players, good basketball players. And it's just more than just talent. It's having a intricate and intimate and thorough understanding of all the aspects of what you're dealing with. Being an expert, if you will. So it breeds competence. With competence comes proficiency and success. And they've kept this knowledge from us deliberately. It's our being shown the existence of these estates. And of course, the executor office, the executrix office, goes with the trust and the state law automatically. And the reaction by the barflies is undeniable proof that this is, in fact, a reality that they've been keeping from us all our lives. I don't know what those lawyers do in taking their oaths, their secret bar oaths, and what that involves. But it seems to me there's been a lot of whistleblowers, especially the last 20 years or so, who've leaked out information, inside information, different things. Especially on the internet now, they can do that anonymously and get a wide audience, a lot of coverage, things like that. But I know of no lawyer who has ever penned anything to leave knowledge, secret knowledge that only esquires or barflies have, behind to be distributed or published. And even there's been many Masons that have written books, and some of them been killed because of it, and released information about the Masonic Lodge. And the Masonic Lodge and its secrecy is no different than the Bar Association. They're absolutely identical in most every respect in how they operate. They operate in secrecy. It's only by invitation only. You can't just walk in there. It's not your local Veterans Association or Athletic Association, Vikings or Moose Lodge or the Elks or something like that, and lay down your dues. Maybe get somebody at the bar to sponsor you for membership and join. You can't do that in Masonic Lodge, and you cannot do it in Bar Association. And they both operate almost identically in secrecy. And what is done in secret is not done in honor, you see. Throughout Scripture, we're warned about secrecy and secret societies. And when the revolution took place in 1776 and after that, secret societies were very much frowned upon. And Masons had to operate very low-key. So, and that's for a reason, because it's just immoral. It's deceitful. It's wicked. It's what it is, you know. You're either doing something wrong, or you have some knowledge about something, or intent to do something that you can't share with everyone, because it would defeat what you're attempting to do if everyone knew what you were doing, see, or you would be exposed. Now, we don't tell everyone everything we do, and I may sound a little bit like a hypocrite in saying what I'm doing, but we can't release everything that we've been given or we're working with until we get to a certain stage where we've got this aced, so to speak, to where we own it. We release this statement and executor information and I very hurriedly put this letter together and got it out there and published it, and that's one of the reasons for the 6 revisions now. Wasn't real well thought out. It was, but had a lot of grammatical errors in it, you'll find, because I'm just not a highly educated, formally educated individual. And I don't care anymore about proper English grammar now than I did when I was in elementary and junior high school. I just don't care about it. I'm not interested in being a literary elitist or whatever that is, you know. I do want to get my point across, and when I write things, and mostly what I write, it has some type of relationship with law. I'm just playing to one audience, and that's to the barfly. And I just want to get my point across to them in such a way that they'll understand it and they can't get around it. And whether the commas are perfect or properly placed and the sentence is structured the best that it could be.
You make a big deal out of the 14-inch paper. What is behind that?
It's because it's legal size.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had somebody email me.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Today about that. Well, why can't I take the they call it an address at the bottom of the page off. That's not an address. That's not an address, folks. It's a location. It's a postal location, and I'll get to that. But they thought that they should be able to take that postal location that they called an address off the bottom of it and put it on 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, where they can do that if they want to. But they're going to destroy what it is, because it will no longer be a legal document. There is no such thing as a legal document on 8.5 by 11 size paper. That's commercial size. Go ahead.
Where does it say that?
Well, it's just history. It just is. The deeds that are produced today I've never seen a commission of an elected official or an oath of office or a bond issued for an elected official that's not on 8.5 by 14 paper. They just all are. And the reason for that is because it's the legal size.
Okay.
It's the lawful size. Say, the barfly courts have adopted, back in the 70s, I think they did 8.5 by 11, because they're not lawful courts. So they don't need lawful size paper. It's called legal size paper today. It just is. It probably always will be.
I hope that clears it up for everyone that had a question about that.
All of the bills, legislation, if you go to your state capitals or the Congress, you'll find that those are all drafted on 8.5 by 14 size paper, folks, because it's legal size. This lady, bless her heart, her argument was, well, they don't use it in the barfly courts anymore. Well, you're not going into the barfly courts. The idea is to avoid that. If you want to go in there and play with in that cesspool, then don't use the executor letter or the estate when and wallow in their cesspool if that's what you want to do. But this is a legal document. It gets their attention because it's constructed the way it is. Everything is particular for a particular reason. It would be best if you can print it out on a color laser printer, because then if it gets wet by intentionally or by happenstance, the ink won't run, it'll still be legible. If that's not available to you, then you can use an inkjet printer. I don't see a problem with that, but I always use a laser printer. I've been doing that for, maybe 15 years now, for everything, because I don't want anybody to be able to alter what I put on that document. And a laser printer doesn't just sprinkle ink or spray ink on the paper. It actually puts the toner on the paper, and then it goes to a heater that fuses it into the grain of the paper, and you can't remove it. You just can't erase it or anything. So
you have the whole thing pretty much written in blue ink?
It should be in blue ink because this is royal law and it's royal blue. So, and in black is commerce. The color of commerce is black. That's why the barflies use black and white. There's no life to what they do. It's just dead. There's no life to it. It's black and white, and black and white are not colored.
And just so everybody knows, it's not a cut-and-paste document. So,
I had one individual email me and complained that they wanted to know how to get all these these boxes and arrows and everything off of the document so they could use it. I don't know what they have in mind, how they're going to do that. They can. I didn't securitize the document so it can't be altered with an Adobe Acrobat program, because people can crack that anyway. I'm just not interested in doing such things or going to the trouble of doing it. I don't guard what I am able to create or develop and publish to you folks as being my property. I don't do that. I have no pride in authorship. If you can improve on it, then do so. If you tamper with it, you do that at your own peril.
Right. You don't want anybody changing anything. The wording, it's there for a reason.
It's all, every word's there for a reason. If you change it, you alter it, you do it at your own peril. Don't construct the letter correctly. If you fail to put that certified mail sticker on, that real thin one under the date where we showed put it, and mail it certified mail to the office that we direct you to serve it to, you run a risk of it failing for you. Everything is on there. It's for a reason. We've been using these techniques very successfully. And
give us an example of some of the successes.
Well, how about membership with the Federal Reserve as a foreign financial institution, for one? How about registration with NATO, for another? About
what's that?
That's just a contractor status, actually. As a foreign contractor, it doesn't necessarily have any meaning for you folks. It has to do with some of the things that we're trying to do, and ultimately the number one goal is to obey Scripture and come out of the world system and be separated from it. Something we're just experimenting with,
Don't tell us about those, because you're very limited on what you can tell us. Tell us about the ones, well, like you told us that gentleman got his children. What else? Is there anything else? Any other? You were telling me somebody Somebody was talking about a court case. Somebody got someone out of prison.
I'm told that there's a man in New York State. I still don't have any documentation for this. The report comes that Maria Janet, associated with Rod Class and AIB Radio, is up in New York now, or at least was yesterday, and she's involved with this and used the executor letter. I think if I remember correctly, the man was charged with practicing law without a license and he was jailed. I don't have any documentation or any particulars, and the information I have is secondhand. I'd gotten an email about his situation that he anticipated he was going to be abducted and taken into custody a couple weeks ago, and I suggested he utilize the executor letter. I'm just told that Maria is involved with getting him out and using the executor letter. Whether in fact that's true or not, I can't say. It's just a report. It comes from a fairly reliable source. And got him released from jail. I imagine the case is gone, but I don't know for certain.
That's an interesting aspect about this executor letter. Usually if you go to court and you have a case, from what I understand and what I've been told, that case never closes, even, you know, 20 years after it's been presented. It never really closes in normal circumstances. But with the executor letter, that really closes out the case? Or
It seems to on the public side. Now, whether it, even with an expungement or even a gubernatorial pardon or something like that, I'm not sure that destroys the financial trading on the private side, because the commerce guru's position is that even after a bank account is closed, they continue trading on that savings or checking account or a CD or whatever it is, because it's only closed on the public side. And what takes place with those securities being traded on the private side continues even after you've passed away. So even if the case is dismissed, they're still trading on it. See, if you've signed any documents, especially, your signature is gold. It just is in the financial markets. It's you're the creditor for everything. And they would be like throwing gold away to them. I can't see them doing that. The world is too greedy. So
that's what John Stewart says about the promissory notes, too. Long after your house has been sold, you know, 10 times over, there are notes out there still, because they never give the note back to the person, you know, after they paid off the loan or sell it or whatever. You know, that promissory note is supposed to be done away with that after every transaction, right?
Right.
I mean, after
supposedly, but it's not.
Sold. Yeah, I know. They just keep them out there. They keep securitizing them. And
well, they give you a photocopy of your mortgage contract with the words stamped across it in ink, satisfied, and then they sign it and date it, and that's what you get. But you don't get the note back.
Right, that's what I mean.
Because they don't have to give it back to you. They invested it in the market and bundled it with everybody else's notes. You know?
Yeah, they can't give it to you.
And that appears to be what's going on in the book. So,
yeah, and what he says is that, I need to talk about his stuff on your call, but something you may not know is that when you go into court, if they try to foreclose on you, they have to present the evidence. And the evidence would be the promissory note is evidence of the debt. So if they don't bring the note forward and the judge sequester the evidence, then there is no evidence of a debt. Therefore, there is no loan. So either way, if they bring the note in and the judge has to sequester it, you win. Because if it also says that a promissory note is discharged with the judgment. So I thought that was interesting, but anyway.
But it's not, and you got to give credit to these commerce gurus and these folks following their teachings and bringing that issue to bear on the court systems this past year. They got a lot of these mortgage foreclosure actions shut down. They're starting to open them back up again. seems.
So they never shut down.
Well, the foreclosures at least were put on hold for a while or something. I'm told that that's actually the judges retaliating against the lending institutions because a lot of their retirement funds were invested in those toxic mortgages,
right.
And their investment payments they were going to get or are receiving plummeted as a result of that. And so the favorable decisions you're seeing, even in the mainstream media of so-called U.S. District Court Judge Barflies and state court judges and shutting them mortgage companies down from foreclosing and dismissing their cases and things like that. It's just a retaliation from the lawyers, the judges.
I hope so.
Because they'll turn it right around and quash all of your evidence in a tax case and send you to prison for 20 years for the same fraud. See?
Has there been anybody in foreclosure using the executor letter with any positive results yet?
Two that I know of, one in Washington State and one in New Jersey.
And what happened?
They're both shut down, stopped.
Foreclosures are stopped?
Yes. Yeah. Cases dismissed, shut down, expunged. I don't know exactly what's going on with them.
Oh, wow. Is there any way we can look at those or...
I don't have the docket numbers or anything. And
will you be getting those?
I don't know. I guess I could ask for them. I'm not really interested in those things.
I think the best way for us to learn is to see how it pans out for us.
Well, you folks want to see, you want to hear war stories, and you want to see documentation and results and things like that. And some people that they want those types of things, and that's fine. But that's not going to do you any good. You've got to learn this, folks, and use it yourself, and then you'll see the results. Until it actually works for you or for a loved one or someone you know that you're personally involved with, you're not going to have any confidence in it, and that's what you need. You've got a very difficult, rocky road ahead of yourself in getting your mind and your reasoning system straightened out, that you stop looking at these so-called authorities as authorities when they're not. They just never were. I hate to break your heart, but they're just not. The estates are the authorities, and the executor office is the highest authority. I know it goes counter to what we say about the notary office, but see, the notary office always was there to serve the sovereign, which is the executor office. Say, we've always known that notary office is a trust office and with fiduciary responsibilities. And we're not the trustee. We're just the occupant of the office, and we serve the true trustee. And now after, I guess it's been about 5 years now since we developed the notary office and activated that. I mean, we didn't invent it or create it. We just activated it. And you're doing the same thing with the executor office. You're not inventing that. You're just stepping up to the plate, entering the office, and activating it. It's been sitting there dormant your whole life. There's really no difference. It's easy for us to grasp what's going on with us, more so than it is for you, because of our 5 years of experience with the notary offices. And war stories are nice to hear, and certainly when children are taken out of the clutches of this wicked, demonotic child services industry, that's quite a blessing and things like that. But the war stories are not important. The documentation is not important. You're probably not even going to be able to get or may not even be able to get court dockets that prove this stuff out, because the lawyers and the barflies are going to try and suppress it and hide it as much as they can.
Yeah.
So we don't really expect such things.
Yeah.
The success is that whatever the situation is, it goes away. And that's the intent of it. The intent is not to destroy the career of the barfly judge or the lawyer, or destroy them financially, or to punish them in any way, shape, or form. That's not the intent. We don't want that to happen. And I have another war story I'll tell you about a chief financial officer of a big corporation was terminated this past week as a result of the executor letter. Remind me about that later, if you will, Angela. We want these people to repent, folks, and stop their wickedness, you know, and stop brutalizing us. We're their neighbors, you know, and we share the community. They share the community, our community. See, they share our community. It's not their community. This is our community that we occupy in these population centers, no matter how sparse they are. And it's always the barfly that's the outsider and the intruder. He's always there to agitate, and he's never there seeking peace. He's always seeking conflict, and where there is no conflict, he'll cause it. See?
Yeah, he can't make any money without that.
That's right, they can't. You know, they're not problem resolution minded individuals when they come out of that law school. They're just not. They're not problem resolution minded individuals. They are conflict
controversy
generating,
yeah,
minded individuals, and that's what they do. And we need not to have anything to do with what they do. And just because they serve their stupid paperwork on you, or they threaten you, whether they send gunslingers after you or not, you really have no need to fear these people. You only fear them because you've been deceived into believing that they're authorities and they can actually do something to you, when in fact they cannot without your consent or your complicity. It's just the way it is.
The executor letter does what?
It puts them on notice that you are aware of the estate and the executor office. And then in doing that, all of these officials, government servants, be they a street sweeper, a mayor, a city councilman, county commissioner, governor, judges, it doesn't matter. They're all functioning in fiduciary capacities as trustees of the office that they occupy. Whether it's elected or appointed, it doesn't matter. Hired, it makes no difference. Every one of them has an oath. And even if they don't have the oath on record, they've taken the oath. They've subscribed the oath some way or other. And even if they haven't done that, it doesn't matter, because they've cashed a paycheck or they've accepted the benefits. So if they've cashed a paycheck or accepted the benefits, then they're responsible for the fiduciary duties of the office. And the fiduciary duties, folks, is the highest responsibility in law. There is no higher responsibility. All parents automatically have those things. See? And the fiduciary duty of all of these offices, police officer, they're appointed, hired, it makes no difference, is to serve the estate and protect them. They're still there to protect and to serve. See, they don't say what on the side of their vehicle, their cruisers. But in fact, what they're there to serve and protect is the executor office, the occupant of that office and the estates. Because the entire world financial system under the IMF, or even going back to Great Britain, is entirely based on the estates of the serfs and the peons. The regular everyday folks like you and I. It's always been that way. Because Yahweh didn't create this cotton-picking universe and this planet and populate it with all these wonderful creations of his and put us here to be enslaved by these idiots that think they shouldn't have to work every day. They just have servants wait on them hand and foot and live in a lamp of luxury, you know, and rule over other people. They're not put on this planet to do that. we're put on this planet to be good stewards and to serve our fellow man. They're not different. They think they are, but that's just their illusion. They have enough people believing that their illusion is real, so they call them a king or a queen or a pope or a president or a mayor or whatever. It's just delusion that's taking place inside the space between your ears. It's not in fact real. It just isn't. They're no better than you and I are. That's right. Bill Gates, Bobbitt, that hairdo, Donald Trump, those people are no better than you and I. In a lot of ways, they wouldn't make a pimple on your butt. Not really. There isn't probably a moral bone in their body or a thought for anyone except themselves. First thought when they wake up in the morning is about themselves, how wonderful they are and how rich. Just imagine how long that man has to stand in front of a mirror to get that stupid overcome of his to stay in place. I mean, what's wrong with being bald? He seems to me he has enough money that he'd be able to buy a pretty decent wig, rug or whatever. Yule Brynner made a career out of being bald, so tell his fellas, it's not such a bad gig. What's wrong with him? Well, it's called ego, see? That's all. It's the love of themselves. And he actually thinks he looks better like that. He looks like the clown that he is. And I would tell him that to his face. I wouldn't have any compulsion to do that. He's an idiot. It's just, folks, this whole world system, this media, this TV, these movies, the sports, it's just to distract you from the reality of what's really going on. So you don't figure this stuff out, like the estate and the executor office. And this isn't all of it. This is just a scratch on the surface. You can't imagine what else there is. You just can't imagine. And over time, as we can, we'll give you the rest.
Why don't you give us a step-by-step?
Well, I will if step gets me off on other tangents.
I didn't get you off on anything.
Oh, you did too. Just ask anybody.
You're the one going off on tangents, I know. I know. It's okay. We still love you.
All right.
But you know what? We've got eight or ten people on here wanting to ask a question.
Well, I just have to wait. I want to go.
Oh, now it's 15, actually. Well, we can get a lot of stuff done. And when people ask questions, it's like getting right to the point.
It is. But let me go through the document.
Okay. That would be great. Everybody get your document out so we can follow along.
Are we ready?
You're ready.
You got 423 people on your call right now.
Okay. We got 16 people waiting in line to ask you a question.
The all caps name at the top of the estate, we took the word the out from in front of that description for a reason. And the reason is that the word the does not appear on the certificate of birth. That was to make it as exact as it should be. If you put the word the, I'm told by English grammar experts, before the name of the estate, then you remove the comma between the name and the word estate. And then when you do not have the word the there, they're telling me you have to put a comma there, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. The word estate is in upper and lowercase. Now, there are those of you that are emailing me telling me that you're name on your certificate of birth is not in all caps, so what you do in that case, well, I think I've said here, exactly as shown upon the certificate of birth. Now, I did say all caps, exact name, but however it's shown on the certificate of birth is the description of the estate and how it's known. Say, And the address of that estate, where it will always be located, is the file number on the certificate of birth. They'll mail it to the executor if you request a copy of it, and probably pay about $10. But the estate doesn't reside with the executor where the executor is located. It always resides on that file number. Department of Health, probably Vital Statistics.
Okay, so those of us, just a second.
Whether it's up or in lower case, you just put it on there the way it is, exactly off the certificate of birth.
Okay.
All right. Did that cover what you were about to say?
Yes.
Good.
Because mine is upper and lower case, but originally you said I should make it all uppercase.
Okay, let me correct that. Conform to how it's written on the certificate of birth.
Lovely, thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's the way it's the name. That's how it's known at all. If you do not get that correct, then the executor letter will not work for you. I'll tell you that. Got to be exact. Underneath that, you notice that every sentence ends with a period. The name of the estate, comma, the word estate, period. That's to stop the barfly from adding something else to a line that doesn't end with a period. Underneath that is executor office, upper and lower case, period. That's all you put there. The nation and then your state, like Arizona, Pennsylvania, or whatever it is. You do not put nation of there, because when you put the word of in there, you create a legal fiction. It's like the office of who's being mailed to. Say, it's the office of court administrator. That's a legal fiction. See, it's not de jure, it's de facto. And this executor office is de jure. It's not de facto, so you do not put the word of in there. You change the whole nature of what that office is and destroy it, and the letter will not work. And so it's not the nation of your state, say, or the state of a nation or anything like that. It's just nation state, nation Pennsylvania, nation Arizona, nation New York, Ohio, whatever. And that's period, and then you will always use the words general hyphen post office, period. Why do you do that? Because, and I'll tell you why in a second. There's a specific reason for doing that. You always put that there. It is best for you to stop getting mail delivered to your home or apartment or even office. Because if you stop doing that and you take that mailbox off there and that cotton picking number and that welcome mat, then the authorities and the zoning officer has no authority there any longer. The mailbox and the welcome mat and the number on the building is an open invitation that's part of their jurisdiction where they have authority to operate and to exercise their diluted corporate fictional barfly authority that they don't even have. So it's better to do that. If you don't want to do that and you still want your mail delivered and you still use general hyphen post, joining those two terms together with the hyphen for a reason, and office, then whatever your street is, since you live on south, north, east, west, avenue, or whatever, Market Street, Broad Street, you know, whatever it is, and then hyphen and the address of the home, 100, and then in that case you've got to leave the mailbox there and the number on the building. And the reason that's written in that format with the number last is because it puts it on the land and takes it out of the United States and corporate state jurisdiction by doing that. It's how you describe the mailing location at General Post. Otherwise, go back to 100 Main Street in any town, Pennsylvania, and be subject to all their crap that they want to infest you with. The choice is yours. And it ends with a period, of course. Then it's any town, whatever your town is. You know, York, Baltimore, Miami, Austin, whatever it is, Phoenix, period. And then you always put United States, minor, comma, outlying islands, period. And I'll explain in a moment why that is. And then you put the word near, period. Then you put a bracket, and you put the normal zip code in there, and you put -998, and close the bracket. Everywhere where there's a zip code on this document, you put that in brackets and leave it there. Because even though it's 9998, it still has entanglements with the postal system and the world, and you don't want those. So you bracket them. It's actually not on the document. You want it in brackets. You don't use 9999. 9999 is the postmaster's private zip code extension for the postmaster of the postal service or for general delivery. Say, 9998 is the private postmaster designation of the postmaster at General Post Office. And this is why. That General Post Office described on there, that's the estate's post office, folks. And the postmaster is the occupant of the executor office with 9998.
So we are.
And if you use that as your home location or your business, you have, in law, changed your home into the post office. Period. And that's the law. Can I show you a law that says that? No, I cannot. But all the indicators of what's going on and how this terminology in describing this postal location is being used on the web in government, on government websites, to register for NATO, to register to Treasury, to register to Federal Reserve, for other people to use it as General Post out in Los Angeles, California, they're all recognizing that as a valid mailing location of Los Angeles, California, United States minor, outlying islands. And you can see it on the faces of the postal supervisors working there, I'm told, the confusion, because they don't get that. And it's understandable. All they know is the DMM. They call it the domestic manual, mail manual. I think it's the dumb mailman's manual, to dumb down the mailman. Okay, not that they're dumb, but to dumb down the mailman. They put that mailing location in their post office computer. It comes up as a valid mailing location. You got a postal supervisor there in Los Angeles. He's looking out the window at the Pacific Ocean, and his computer is trying to figure out what's going on there, because in everything that he understands in his world of reality, there's cotton-picking islands. There's 3,000-4,000 miles out there in the Pacific. They sure as heck aren't in Los Angeles. How in the heck does Los Angeles have anything to do with the United States minor outlying islands? And here is the simple description of that. That is a country location, but they are nation states, those islands. And the United States is minor, comma, to the outlying island, nation states surrounding it. That's the only possible explanation there is. There can't be another one. And when I can enter that information on Department of Transportation, NATO, Federal Reserve, to register as a foreign financial institution, to have the same contractual relationship with the Fed as every Federal Reserve Bank has, not regular banks, but the Federal Reserve Bank, that level of access, and the United States Treasury, and several government military intelligence websites that I can't tell you about, when they accept that mailing location, it's got to be valid, because you cannot type patriotic gobbledygook in there. you can't do it. It won't. The system will not accept it. It won't let you proceed with whatever you're doing, registering. It just will stop you. You can see there's an icon cycling there on the screen, like you get a busy icon with your mouse when the system's busy. Well, that's what happens when you enter information in on most of these websites, except especially the very secure ones like the Fed and the Treasury and these intelligence websites. The system sits there and it verifies the information I put in there before it'll let you click and proceed. And if it isn't right, it brings up an error when they're telling you that it's wrong. See, it's been accepted. This Treasury Direct document that Angela has on her website, where they're describing David Clarence Schroll as being a dead dude. See, yet David Clarence Schroll is still the trustee. That is the mailing location that the Treasury put on there. Their computer system will not let those employees enter gobbledygook, patriot gobbledygook, or any other kind of stupid concepts into their system when they're typing a mailing location, because it verifies it. It verifies it with the post office zip code directories, or it won't let you proceed. And it won't let them put an address on a document to mail to somebody that it doesn't verify with the post office computer system. And they've got every address in there. But this is not an address. It's a mailing location. When mail is delivered to that general post, it's now out of the jurisdiction of the Postal Service. It's now in the hands of that general post office. See? You've moved it out of that domestic realm outside of their jurisdiction into the private, where you've always been. They just tricked us into acting in their fictional corporate domestic realm all of our lives. So that's why that's there and described the way it is. And you need to use that exactly like it is on everything that you can put it on. I don't know if you can get it on a driver's license. If you can, put it on there. If you can change your vehicle registration, your mortgage, all your contracts, loans, things like that, it'll only benefit you. Yeah. There will not be any detriment to you doing this. So this I give you my personal guarantee. I can't guarantee you many things other than wicked people will do wicked things and evil people will do evil things. But this I will guarantee you will be a benefit to you. I just know that because it took the FBI, the Department of Justice, over about a year or more to overcome my being located at General Post before they got up the guts to come and abduct me anyway. And it was just the fact that I don't get mail delivered here and never have. I've been at General Post since 1994. So the U.S. Treasury sends Social Security checks to that General Post every month. Even though there's a decedent on that Treasury document, checks are still coming. See? So.
It's only your name that's dead anyway, right?
That's an all caps name is a dead thing. It always has been. It's an estate. And it is a fiction. It's not a live being. It's just not a corporation. If it's anything, it's a company, see?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, there is no negative side, folks, to using General Post Office. There's only positives. I can't possibly conceive. I don't know everything, but I just cannot possibly conceive that there is a detriment to doing that. It just is. All right, so let's get back to the executor letter.
We're talking about the General Post.
Okay.
And the domestic mail manual. No, that was before. Yeah. You were going to mention something about an executor that was fired, or someone was fired because of the executor letter?
Yeah, but not right yet.
Okay.
You want to hear the war stories. I want to get through the letter. Can
okay,
I get through the letter?
Oh, please do. Don't.
All right. I put on here, you will delete and not type any information shown in brackets except for zip codes and court docket, case, and financial account numbers. Let me add to that and also say if it's a husband doing it for the wife or a father doing it for the child, then under where it says regarding, where you're going to put the all caps name off the certificate of birth for the wife or the child, you also put the file number there off of the certificate of birth, and you will put that in brackets because you don't want that on this document. All right. The what?
Does it say file number? Or does it say what the file number is?
Sometimes it'll say file number or type or something. For you folks in different states, that they describe the number differently. It doesn't do any good to email me and ask me what number it is. You need to call your Department of Health Vital Statistics, and they'll tell you what the file number is on that document if you can't figure it out. All right. Now, let's go to the date. We use the word night because in Genesis 1, the universe began at night, and the first day began at night, and that's why it's night of, night, space, hyphen, space, of. And the date is written out with no numbers in there because Yahweh names his children and Lucifer numbers his, and you've got to have a number to function in the world system. And we want to avoid that on this document, and you should be doing that with everything. Now, underneath that date is like a passing lane on a highway. Do you see that? That's what that is. It's a passing lane. It's a lane of passage. It's a right of way, see? It's a sanctuary, and you should have those lines far enough apart that that little thin number sticker off of the certified mail sticker, there's one that detaches at the end of it at the top. And normally people take that off and they put it on a green card. You don't do that. You take it off and you put it on this document between those lines, and you want those passing lanes on both sides of it, showing that it passes into the document, see? It's symbology and things like that, it is, but it has a particular legal significance, that it's not restrained by the edge of the sticker, you see? If you look at embossed seals by courts and notary publics and things like that, on the outside of that seal is a ring, or it's stars, or it's points, or something like that on every one of them. And if you understand the principle of boxing or bracketing something on a document, that it removes it from the document, then every seal that the world is using is not on the document because they're all bordered in by the outside ring. See? The principle has to apply to everything. So it could be construed that the outside edge of that sticker is like a box, say, or a bracket, restraining it, that it's not really on the document. So the only way to defeat that is to put those passing lanes there and put the sticker in between. See, that's why it's there. Now, the document, and you must put that sticker on there, folks. You absolutely have to. It certifies that document. And then you're going to have a notary public notarize it. And the notary public is going to record it in the notary register. Now you've got a registered certified document. It doesn't get any more powerful than that. You've got two different records, three different records. You've got the executor's office record of the document. You've got the notary public record of the registry in the registry of the document, and you've got the United States Postal Service record of that document. It's recorded three times. Doesn't get any better than that. You've got three witnesses, and Scripture says you only need two. And those would give you three, so you got an extra one. See? But you've got two witnesses on that document, on its face. And the one is the notary public, and the second one is the post office. And that's the reason for it. Everything is proven by two witnesses. And that's why it's there. You are always going to direct this executor letter to an office occupied by a living being. It's not the office of the Bureau of Taxes, because the office of the Bureau of Taxes isn't occupied by a living being. The director of that office is, say, then it's the director's office that you're, of the tax bureau, that you're going to direct it to. That's why it's the office of the court administrator. No matter what you're dealing with, if it's a court-related issue, if it's a local, a citation, a summons, a small claims court, criminal case, a civil, traffic ticket, traffic violation, if it's a summons, a citation doesn't go to the court, okay, a traffic ticket. That won't work until you don't appear and you get a summons in the mail or they serve one on you. Now it's a court case. It has a court docket number. Whenever it's a state court issue, be it county court, municipal traffic court, civil or criminal, it doesn't matter. It always goes to the office of the state court administrator at the state capitol. Sometimes they're calling that judicial districts or something like that. I'm being told, I haven't researched the issue thoroughly. Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has the office of the court administrator for the unified judicial system, the Pennsylvania courts, and that's what we're using. You need to find something similar to that. You want to be sure that you're finding the highest office right under the Supreme Court justices of that state. And that, I don't mean the clerk, because you don't want to file something into the barfly court system. You want to operate on the administrative side of the court, because they're the ones doing all the financial transactions on the private side. And the administrator's office can pull the plug on the court case. They just go over their computer and hit a couple of keys and it's gone. Disappeared. They have the authority to do that. And there's a couple of people that have gotten all the documents sent back to them from the state court administrator. I haven't seen their letter to see if there's any defects in how they did it or not. But they didn't just send them a letter back telling them that they couldn't deal with this. They mailed all the documents, their abandoned paperwork back. It was an expensive thing to do. Do you know why they did that? Because they want to get rid of this. They don't want to deal with it. They want to make it go away. They're hoping that they'll trick those people or confuse them into not doing anything further with that. All right. We'll talk about what to do in an instance like that later on. That's happened a couple of times. We are dealing with a situation like that now, where the executor letter is not being respected by a local court, and they're moving a case ahead with the case. Okay. Now we're going after the judge's bonds, the lawyer's bonds, and the clerk's bonds, and the local court administrator's bonds. And if the state court administrator has been served, we'll go after their bond and every Supreme Court justice on that state bench. And that's what we're doing. We only gonna have to do that one time. And they'll get every one of them will get the word, and then you won't have the problems with it. We're trying to deal with that for you now. And that's another reason why I can't be answering all your emails and your questions, you know, and things like that. We've got to keep working on our projects so that you all benefit the most from it, you know. So if it's a U.S. court case, a bankruptcy, it doesn't matter if you filed it. You want to stop the bankruptcy? Shut it down? That you're confident enough that you can stop whatever you were dealing with previously? Maybe it's an IRS lien and collection action for taxes. Well, deal with the IRS issue first. Get that out of the way. Then you can do the executor letter on the bankruptcy, even though you filed it. Doesn't matter. Because you filed it as an incompetent individual, a citizen, a taxpayer, say, a slave, a legal fiction entity. Now you're going to do something in your de jure capacity for your first time in your life and function in the executor office as the representative of the estate. So do the IRS tax issue first. Now, if it's not going to court, and it's just an IRS tax collection issue, then, or a local tax, you want to deal with that, real estate, school taxes, whatever it is, you're going to send the executor letter to the chief counsel of the highest office in the state and let them deal with it, or that issue. In the instance of the IRS, it's the chief counsel for the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, in Washington, D.C. Go on the website and get their cotton picking address. That's the top law dog, and he knows the law. When he gets this, he's going to do something about it. The old adage is true. Poop flows downstream, you know what I mean? And what comes down gets a greater reception. It's more important. It gets dealt with much quicker than something that's pushed up from the bottom of the pile, say, or the ladder. So you want to go at the top and cause the cascade of events to come down from the top onto whatever you're dealing with locally. And that's the best way to do it. You go to the office of chief counsel, and then it's attention. For the IRS, that's what it would be. If it would be your local taxes, I would go to the chief counsel for the state treasurer, because they're ultimately the ones collecting the taxes, or your state department of revenue. Go to the chief counsel. It's an administrative matter. It's not a court action. They're serving you the tax notices. It's an administrative procedure, as you know. So you have to deal with it administratively, and the executor office always deals with the administrator function of the government, because the executor office is, in fact, the court. It's not it's an administrative office, but it's a judicial office also. See? You have to excuse this noise in the background. I've got a kitty here. That's making some noise. So I would send it to the chief counsel of the State Department of Revenue, see, in that instance. Always go to the lawyer at the top of the food chain if it's not a court issue. And the administrative office for the state courts, or the office of the court administrator for the United States courts, is a lawyer. Those court administrators are all lawyers. They're all barflies. They know the law. And when you send this executor office, letter to a court administrator, they notify all the Supreme Court justices immediately for the state. And if it's the United States, they notify the Supreme Court justices and all the circuit court judges immediately. They all get notified of this. You send it to the chief counsel, the Department of Revenue, or the IRS, the director, the secretary, whomever it is, the highest rascal, gets notified immediately. Maybe the treasurer of the United States also, I don't know. know, who's that, Bernanke now or somebody? But he gets notified, but his one of his assistants or aides are the ones that deal with it. But when they see this, they're going to bring it to their attention. This is serial stuff, folks. This is a double certified registered document that it's unlike any document they've ever gotten. They've never gotten a piece of mail that cotton picking certified mail sticker was on the document that was inside the envelope. They've never gotten that before. Because we're not taught how to do it that way. You don't have to go and get somebody else to certify your document for you. Why would you do that when you're occupying the highest office in the highest law? Why would you go down to some clerk or county registrar or somebody like that and get that non-existent idiot, that legal fiction moron, and they're nice folks occupying those offices and this and that, to certify and try and legitimize something that you're doing with the highest office in the highest law that exists? It doesn't make any sense. So you certify it yourself. And you do that by using the post office to do that. Now remember, that communication, okay, correspondence, that's what this is, it's correspondence, has been certified by the United States Postal Service for what? Your general post office. Okay? Locks all that in. The post office and the postmaster's position of the executor. It brings that all in, ties it all in. That's what that's about. All right. So then you're going to send a letter to the attention of the occupant of the office that you're sending it to. Chief counsel, if you're dealing with a bank foreclosure and it's still threatening, it hasn't gone into a court case yet, you send an executor letter to the chief financial officer of the bank or the financial institution. They'll deal with it. It'll scare them to death because that brings all their mortgage fraud or their loan fraud, their car loan fraud, their credit card fraud. It drags it all out into the public and exposes all of it, see? And they can't have that happen. It terrifies them. They'll deal with it. And they've been dealing with it. The foreclosures have just been going away. And then the corporate location of the state court or financial if there's an office like the Ronald Reagan building or James Madison building or something like that, then that's what that means. And then the street 10 Public Square, whatever the street address is, any town, wherever it is, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And you always put capital U, capital S, capital A. And then there is zip code in brackets to separate it from the United States. Even if you're transmitting this to D.C., you still put USA down there because you always want to remain non-domestic to the U.S. foreign phony baloney corporate entity. You must do that. You cannot drag this estate or this executor office into the world system and interact with it. You can't get in bed with it. You can't get into contractual relationships with these entities. They're going to come down on you if you do that. You can't intermix those, and I'll get into that a little bit later. So it's the individual occupying the office. Then it's down at two, the office of, see the example of, the office of court administrator. And where is it from? It's from the executor office of the name off of the birth certificate, comma, estate. This communication is office to office. It's not defendant or citizen or taxpayer or consumer to some supposed authority. That's not what this is. It's office to office, and your office that you're occupying, the executor, executrix office, is superior to theirs. They're inferior to yours. See? It's non-personal. It's official communications. It's not from the individual, the sovereign crap, the taxpayer, the consumer. It's from the office. The office is the office is the office, and it has all the authority. It's not your office. It's not your estate. If you call it your estate in court, a judge asks you, is this your estate? And you say yes, he's going to slam you because it's not. It's the grantor's estate. Yes, you're standing there and you've got the grantor's footprints in your cotton picking shoes and socks or pantyhose. But you better not say, I'm the grantor, or indicate that you are, because the grantor is liable. They have the liability. You don't want the liability. You want the immunity. The occupant of the executor office has all the immunity. They are liable for nothing unless you commit a fraud or harm someone or their property. These we will refer to as your estate. It is not, because you're not functioning as the grantor. You're functioning as the occupant of the executor office. It's not your estate. It's the grantor's estate. Those are two different legal capacities. You do not want to occupy them both for very specific legal reasons that are going to be very detrimental to you and negative on your experiences if you describe yourself as any way, shape, or form is that being your estate or you're the grantor, or you take your shoes off and show them your footprints, even though I've suggested that you do that in previous broadcasts. And rethinking about it, it's not a good idea to do that because you got liability. And then this is the important line here, folks, is the regarding issue. What's it regarding? The unauthorized administration of the estate name. What's the unauthorized administration? Anything. Any of their paperwork. I don't care what it is. Bill, invoice, tax notice, doesn't matter. Summons, warrant, it's all unauthorized administration because the executor office has not delegated in writing to that entity to have any business relationship with the estate, and the executor can't do that. The executor cannot authorize these fictional entities of the world to have any administrative authority over the estate. It's impossible. They're in the dark. The estate is in the light. You are in the light, and they are in the shadow of death. You can't get, if you move out of the light into the shadow, then the estate disappears. Poof. So is the executor office. What happens if they come out of the dark into the light? It's like the vampire entering the light. That's why they created that story and the image. That's the evil coming into the light. That's the foundation of the vampire story. What happens to the vampire? It's destroyed. What's the book that was created how many years ago? Vampire Killers 2000. See? Jack McLean. So then underneath that, you're going to put in brackets whatever their authorized paperwork is. A docket number, a financial account, a tax number, whatever it is. An invoice number, whatever's on their abandoned paperwork, their unauthorized paperwork. That's what you're going to put in there, in brackets. Now, on the husband and wife, or the child, you're going to add another bracket underneath that one. And there you're going to put you're going to put the wife's name off, or the child's name off the certificate of birth, however that's written. Put it there. If it doesn't say junior, or the second, or the third, or the eighth, or the first, you do not put that there anywhere on this document. If it ain't on the certificate of birth, don't use it. See? You might be called Junior. You might have been writing your name Junior or Senior all your life. Don't do it. Not on this. Because it's not on this certificate of birth. And you would put their name off the certificate of birth there and the file number off the certificate of birth in brackets. Doesn't matter to them that it's in brackets because they put all their stuff in brackets somewhere or other or bordering. All their forms are, for the most part. But in law, on a legal document, it's 8.5 by 14 instead of commerce size, 8.5 by 11. These things matter. You want to stay in the law. You do not want to venture in or slip over the precipice, fall off the side of the cotton-picking cliff into the shadow of death. Stay out of that. Stay in the light. And the first paragraph starts out, enclosed is you will find your abandoned paperwork. Whatever it is they sent you, folks. I don't know what it is. Don't email me asking me if this is the right thing or not. Whatever they got, they sent you. It's a lawsuit, a summons, a warrant, a notice, an invoice, a bill, taxes. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, if it has an account or a docket number, or a collection number from bill collectors. What would you do with a bill collector in those? You know, I don't know. That's one that I would say send it to the, I'd send it to the chief counsel or the state treasurer to deal with. Because they should be a corporation and registered under the, I'm sorry, chief counsel of the Department of State for the state. They should be a corporation. I'm sure they are because of liability. So therefore, they're incorporated under the Secretary of State. You send the paperwork to the chief counsel for the Secretary of State for a cotton-picking bill collector. Because it isn't going to do you any good to send this executor letter to some idiot running a bill collection service. He doesn't know what it is. Now, he might take it and throw it in the trash, or he might show it to his lawyer. If he does show it to a lawyer, the lawyer might go, whoa, you know, don't deal with this anymore. I don't know. You're playing Russian roulette. By doing that, always go to the highest government office that you can, and it's always best to go to the lawyer because they're the ones that understand this, and they're not going to tell anybody else. You understand it, and the lawyer understands it. So it just works because they don't want anybody else to understand it. Then their fraud disappears. So that their banded paperwork appears to allege that here's the name, place, the name and title of the author who signed the paperwork. Let's say it comes from an IRS collection agent. Or a automated collection service manager for the IRS, ACS, or a financial officer, somebody at the bank, a collection officer, say a collection department, or whatever it is. That's the name in the office that you put in there. Whoever signed the paperwork or put their name on it, even if they didn't sign it, it's who sent the paperwork to you and put their a name of any kind on it. All right. If it's a private bar card lawyer and really a state bar, then you would use that terminology, see, or a government official, whoever it is, a tax collector, see, something like that. A bank collection officer, a magistrate, a mayor, a supervisor, zoning officer for a zoning violation, tax collector. You put that there, and then you remove the brackets and all those suggestions that I have in those brackets from the document. This just doesn't apply. You just use the terminology that applies to whatever your given situation is. And no, you can't send me a copy of whatever you're dealing with and have me explain it to you. Because it's not. I don't have time to do it. I can't hold your hand. You've got to figure this out or get with somebody else that can explain what name you should put there. I don't know who that is. My best suggestion is get on your knees and pray to God and ask the Lord to show it to you and use their sacred names of Yahweh and Yeshua. Works for me. Works for the men I'm working with. Maybe you ought to do what we're doing. So, there's that. You remove all that. And then it goes on to say, who by their unwarranted acts fraudulently claim authority from this executor office to administrate for the estate name. That false claim is hereby adjourned. Adjourned. It's closed. That allegation, that assumption is adjourned. It's over. It's done with. Because this is a court ruling by the executor office. It is the court, and you're the judge of that estate. That's what an executor does. He makes all the judgments. So you're the judge of the court, and you're adjourning that issue. It's a dead issue, and you're saying so. Now what happens? Paragraph 2, they got nothing but liability. You took away their fraudulent assumption, their Alice in Wonderland effort or whatever they were trying to do to you. That's been adjourned. It's been overruled by the court. It's been dismissed. Now what do they have? Nothing but liability. And that's what paragraph 2 is about. And it doesn't threaten them. Because you don't go to war with these people. Angela and I talked about that beginning of this recording, or maybe before the recording stops. That's all the lawyers are, is agitators. No lawyer graduates from law school as a conflict resolution minded individual. They are conflict minded individuals. If there is no conflict, they'll create one. They have to do that. That's what they do. You can't be at peace with a lawyer. Why do you think they're condemned in Scripture? They never gave anybody any peace in their career. They're not getting any on Judgment Day because they don't deserve it. You don't go to war with these people. That's all these commerce and pro se activities are. Go to war, threaten this, cite that, threaten this, threaten that. I'm going to do this if you don't do that. I'm going to lien you. And then you file the UCC liens and you end up in prison for 6 years like the old man is sitting out in Pittsburgh dying from UCC liens because he went to war with them. He had that case settled. He dismissed the case. We showed him how to do that. Huh? Nothing happened in the case for 3 weeks. It was just dead. The last thing that was there was his order dismissing the case. You know what? He couldn't stand it any longer. So he filed some kind of commerce guru crap. He couldn't let it alone. The day that the court got that, the judge issued a bench warrant for him. They locked his butt up for 60 days until they let him out on lower his bail far enough that he could get out on bail. Bless his heart. He wants to go to war. Go to war with him, you're going to get war. Do you want war or do you want peace in your life? This is peace. If you try and use it for war, you put threats in here. You try and use it to collect some kind of diluted a commerce guru liens and UCC stuff, you're going to prison. I guarantee you, you can't mix these two law forms. You use this executor office and this estate, and the lawyers see you doing that, and then you conflict two different law forms by trying to use lien collection procedures and war tactics. You're going to prison for a long time. Watch and see if I ain't right. Now just watch and see. There's going to be those of you that want to sentence. That's fine. Can you get it through your head? If you have enough faith that we are right in what we're presenting to you that the estate exists in the executor office, then please have enough common sense to listen to us and do not use this for commercial purposes to cash in on it. Because we're also right that you're going to prison for a long time. And all the executor letters in the world will not get you out of it. Because you created the anarchy of merging the two law forms. And that's why. And they will make an example out of you to discourage anybody else from using these if they can get an opportunity to do that. So just do what we do tell you to do, folks. Just be at peace. Let's get rid of this cotton-picking problem, whatever it is. We're working on other things to help you. But just be patient. That's all. Get the situation resolved. I'd have put in a few notes to remove these suggestions that are in there again because folks were not removing them. And I'm not saying you're dumb or anything like this because maybe you've never been had any exposure to any legal stuff before. And this is the first time in your life that you've actually been operating in law since you come out of your mother's womb. Because you've been in the cotton-picking world ever since. You come out of the law of your mother's womb, and you committed your first lawful act. Your footprints were put on a document. And then that was it. You've been in the world ever since. Everything's been worldly ever since then. Hasn't been law. It's all been legal. See?